And Jesus said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fish for people." And immediately they left their nets and followed him. I don't know about you, but every time I hear this story, I get a little bit perplexed. How do you just drop everything in an instant to go an absolutely different direction? Have any of you done that? Have any of you midstream dropped it all and said, "I'm going to do something different"? Now, the other question, have you ever felt like doing that sometimes, perhaps? Yeah. Yeah, that's a much different story here. Preachers and teachers have opined on this text over the ages, giving lots and lots of reasons for why this perhaps could be the case. Perhaps it was just such a depth of faith on the disciples' part that they were just ready for this invitation and bang, they went. Or there were others that said Jesus had such magnetism that he just drew people into him and they didn't know what they were doing before they said, "Yes, I will follow you." But you know, I've heard all of these reasons for it. They just don't make much sense, do they? Of course, it would help. It really would help if there were more of a backstory to make sense of this person, Simon. Simon is the one that Jesus named Peter, Cephas in the Greek, which means rock. And of course, one of the biggest theological debates throughout the centuries has been, did he call him the rock because of his strength, or did they call him a rock because he had the intelligence of a rock? When you look at the gospel, you really have to ask yourself that question. And of course, we have his brother Andrew. Well, it turns out, folks, that there were some other writers, or at least one in particular, who had a backstory. And it really helps us to make a little bit of sense of this. So if you were to look in the first chapter of John's gospel, now remember, John's gospel was written long after the gospel of Mark. Everyone is pretty much in agreement it was the last gospel that was written. And in it, you might find some help. And surprisingly, the help in it centers once again around John the Baptist, this figure that's familiar to us and we were talking about a couple of weeks ago. As you might remember, John's teaching had attracted a great deal of attention, and there were many people who were John's followers, John's disciples, and some even suggested that Jesus early on was one of those people. Well, there is in John's gospel the mention of Jesus one day walking past John and some of his followers. And John's response at that time was, "Look, look, here is the Lamb of God." It was language that was pointing to Jesus' messiahship. Because, see, this was something that was going on in that religious community, in the Jewish community, of wondering and thinking about when Messiah would come. Well, two of John's disciples heard this, and we assume with John's encouragement that they went and followed Jesus to check things out and to see what was going on and to spend some time. And if you read the story a little further, you find out that one of the two was Andrew. That same Andrew, who was the brother of Simon Peter. And after spending time with Jesus, Andrew went to find his brother is Simon, announcing, "We've found the Messiah." So if we get back to Mark's gospel, it's important that we remember it was the first one that was written. And if any of you have spent any time in Mark, you know that the language is somewhat terse. Mark is quick about getting to the point. He does not use a lot of flowery language. It's very straightforward. It is quite the contrast to John's gospel. It is also, along with other source material, the backbone for Matthew and for Luke's gospel. Now, John's gospel, that's another story. It doesn't follow the narrative in the same way. And as I said, it was the last one written. So perhaps there were stories that were circulating that were some of the backstories for the disciples. And they got picked up by John. And looking at it that way, it may indeed be that Simon and Andrew, following Jesus and dropping their nets all of a sudden to catch people, actually made sense. It made sense because Jesus was not a stranger to them. And looking for the Messiah was a task that they had been about for some time. Well, we always have the challenge of dealing with those unaccounted years for Jesus. As I've said before, we know hardly anything about his growing up or the learning that take place, who his rabbis were, who he learned from, how he was being mentored. And I think that's really important because the learning process, the mentoring process, that's what finally brings it to fruition in many of us, the direction we go and the things we choose to do. And it's unfortunate we don't know any of that backstory for Jesus and the motivation. You see, I wonder sometimes, and perhaps you do too, if Simon and Andrew weren't already dealing with a seed that somehow had been planted in them. Because that's a part of the story we just don't know. And you know what happens to you when you have a seed planted within? Do you know what I'm talking about? Have you ever experienced that where there's something inside and it starts to ruminate with you and it gets in your craw and it's something you just can't let go of and it keeps developing and growing until finally something happens? Perhaps that's a way that we can look at this story in Mark. Is when that meeting took place at the sea, something just happened because of everything that had been going on. And if we look at this episode that way, maybe this action really starts to make sense. And so what is it that Mark is trying to tell us here with this simple statement? Well, I think what's going on here is Mark was really showing us, without all the other background, a tipping point for these two followers of Jesus. A time when changing direction was the right thing to do. And remember, there really was a background for this. If they'd had anything to do with John the Baptist, remember what his baptism was about? Repentance, turning yourself another direction, heading another direction. This really could all be making sense. So I like to speculate that there was perhaps a lot of mentoring that was already going on, questioning that was taking place. And mentoring, when it happens to our lives, it starts to lead us, doesn't it, in different directions? Mentoring often will create an openness within us, an openness to other ideas, an openness to other possibilities. And that openness eventually leads, I believe, to being able to better hear and embrace our call. Are calling for what it is you and I are to do with our lives. Now, call is a word that we preachers like to throw around a lot. How many have heard about find your call before? I'm sure this is not the first time. And so often when we talk about this concept of call, there's this notion of it being a thunderbolt kind of thing that's thrown down on us, and all of a sudden we have this amazing vision and we have this amazing understanding of this new thing that we are called and we are supposed to do. Well, I'm not really sure I can count any time in my life when I've had that kind of thunderbolt experience. My experience has been more like little light bulbs turning on. Does that explain it for you, perhaps, sometimes? Because I really think it's a little bit different than what we often attach to call. And maybe it's because we think about that thunderbolt experience, why call is something that seems so far removed from us. Well, the other day in the office, Kathy and I were talking, and one of the things we like to joke about a lot is her Nazarene background. Because, you know, we Methodists kind of view Nazarenes as a little further down the ladder. You know, what can I say? That's just what we do sometimes. And one of the things we talked about, and she had just returned from a board of ordained ministry for the Nazarene Church, is the Nazarenes have this unique theological construct called entire sanctification. Now, it really does come out of Wesleyan theology, because in case you don't know, the Nazarene Church is a Wesleyan church. In fact, its predecessors were really part of the Methodist movement, and then it broke off and created its own thing. You know, we talk about in our Methodist circles of going on to perfection. The Nazarenes like to talk about entire sanctification. And so Kathy shared with me some words that were really helpful in thinking about this passage today, because she said for her operating definition of entire sanctification is the point when we are finally able to turn it all over completely to God. That's what entire sanctification is. It's kind of this idea where all of a sudden we become completely enmeshed with God. That our faith journey, our faith life is not some separate thing. It all comes together in this enmeshment. There's no beginning to it. There's no end to it. And when I think about it, isn't that really what this process of call and calling is about? It's an ongoing process that to find our call, it means that we are at a point in our lives when we are being open to God's leading. A place where we can sit still, we can stop speaking, and we can just listen. Listen to see where God and the Spirit might be taking us. That sense of call is something I believe that's not static. It changes, and throughout our lives, God's calling upon our lives may shift, it may change, it may put us in different places. That's part of what I was talking about when I spoke to you earlier this morning about the discernment that I've been going through, because there have been so many times in my own life and ministry where it has been so critically important to sit down and to understand God's calling and where it was leading at any point of time. And what I would like to suggest is when we're talking about call, it means our desire, our heartfelt desire, is to be in alignment with God and God's hope and God's purposes for our lives. I believe that's what call is about. And that call can be lived out in so many different ways. For some of us, you know, we may translate as it's about being a person with a deep faith, or it's about really claiming that identity as a follower of Jesus. For some, that call might be out there to teach, or it may be to live by example, or it may be out there serving others. But when I talk about us all being called, it means I believe that God desires for all of us to be in alignment with God's hope for this world. And when I look at this story from Mark, that's really what I'm thinking about. That it was a moment in time with all kinds of backstory that we'll never know, where everything came into alignment. And the right thing to do at that moment in time was to drop the nets and head another direction. Now, I'd like you to all look at your worship guide, because you're going to see a piece of paper for this week. You know, this was really about the beginnings of the disciples and their ministry. And what I would like us to spend a few moments reflecting on at this point is to think about, how have you been mentored? How have you been trained? How have you been taught? Who has been doing that for you? And I think this is an ongoing process. It's not just when we're in a formal academic center. We're being mentored all the time. And so right now, where do you think that mentoring is leading you? Or perhaps to address the question that's on here, or the statement, God has called me to. Let's spend some time thinking about that right now. I sometimes wonder if those nets weren't a symbol for the things that get in the way in our lives of responding to God's call. And when the disciples were called to drop those nets, it was a call to let go. Let go of the stuff that's getting you in the way of you being the person that God calls you to be. So friends, what are those nets in our lives? And what is the work God is calling each of us to do? So be it.